Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Keep it, the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Indeed, with an evening tonight with legendary teacher John Taylor Gatto. Stay tuned for that one. We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. John Taylor Gatto completed his undergraduate work at Cornell, the University of Pittsburgh in Columbia. He then served in the U.S. Army Medical Corps at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and Fort Sam Houston, Texas. Following his military service, John did graduate work at the City University of New York, Hunter College, Yeshiva, the University of California, and Cornell. After college, he worked as a scriptwriter, an advertising writer, a taxi driver, an ASCAP songwriter, and other assorted jobs before becoming a school teacher. John has been named New York City Teacher of the Year on 3 occasions. Now, he then quit teaching in 1991 while still the New York State Teacher of the Year, claiming that he was no longer willing to hurt children. Later that year, he was the subject of a show at Carnegie Hall called An Evening with John Taylor Gatto. While launching a career in public speaking in the area of school reform, John is currently at work on a documentary film about the nature of modern schooling entitled The Fourth Purpose with his friend and former student Roland Lee Girardi, Laura, if I got that right, and he also hopes to build a rural retreat and library for the use of families pondering local and personal issues of school reform. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. John, how are you?
Hi, George. Great pleasure to be with you. You're my wife's favorite human being.
Well, that's great. Hey, I hope I didn't butcher your friend's last name too much, huh?
You did a wonderful job on it.
Now, that's because of the teachers I had in school who taught me the right way. You really did quit teaching while you were still the New York State Teacher of the Year?
I quit teaching on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. I said I couldn't hurt kids any longer. That was July 15th, 1991, and almost immediately I expected to go and become a garlic farmer. I have a farm upstate that I'm turning into a retreat, I started to get calls. The first one was from the White House, and the second one was from NASA Goddard Space Center, and those calls have continued right up to the moment. I've traveled 2.5 million miles.
Oh my gosh.
10 countries and all 40, are there 50 states.
Now, when you said you don't want to hurt children anymore, what did you mean by that?
The structure of compulsion schooling is set up to create incomplete people. It's the strangest kind of do-gooder phenomenon. That is to say, the people who did this weren't evil. They simply had a terminal disbelief in the potential of most people. They didn't want them to get in the way of efficient management. And so schools were set up to train people in, it's very odd, unproductive ways and habits and attitudes. The academic patina is window dressing.
You know, John, there's so much I want to talk with you about with schooling and what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and also get your take on comparing what we do to some other countries, because it also seems that when we bring in people from other nations, we're bringing in some high-powered thinkers, you know, these doctors and experts in science, and I'm just wondering if we have that kind of pool to pick from here, why we're pulling from there.
Well, we certainly have that kind of pool to pick from. It's simply not in the larger design for, let me call it, efficient management of the globe, not the United States. The people who gave us our schools had given up their belief in nation states 100 years ago. It's very, very clear from their own writing that they think it's a relic of barbarism, but it will have to be maintained until everyone is brought up to speed. Funny you said great thinkers. I just heard a Russian exchange student the other day, and I mean a junior high school exchange student, say in disbelief when she saw the math curriculum, she said, "Is this a joke?" Now, she wasn't editorializing. She was reacting to the difference between what she was familiar with as a perfectly ordinary student and what's offered here to the so-called gifted and talented. If I seem to take some amusement in this over the next 2 hours, I want to apologize to your readers. It's the only way I keep my sanity after,
I understand,
after dealing with this for 45 years and then another 20 years as a student.
Did we do it all wrong as a country in terms of our educational system?
Well, depends on your own philosophy. From one point of view, and I mean the dominant point of view, not the majority point of view, but the dominant point of view, we've done it brilliantly well. That's why our economy is unstoppable, or has been at least, for 100 years. We've turned people into human resources, away from peoplehood into resourcehood, if I can invent some words there. And because they're so tractable and so manageable, we're able to achieve prodigies of production. The price for that, of course, is incomplete, mutilated lives. It's a radical extension of childhood, way, way beyond its historical parameters, so that people, as they prepare for their coffins, are in a large sense still in childhood.
John, as you look at education when you decided to become a teacher, I'm sure you had your favorite students. They had their favorite teacher, and most of them probably would have picked you. I had one with a science teacher back in sixth grade. His name was Mr. Strom. God bless his soul. I don't think he's alive now. And you know, he got me interested in science, and you know, I would build little rockets for science fairs and things like that. Then I had a teacher in high school who taught physics. His name was Mr. Kiefer. Loved him. I was going into the sciences, and I also wanted to go into broadcasting. So I was going in two different directions, and I tried to put them both together. But it's also the teacher, I think, and the parents that have a tremendous influence on us as kids.
Well, of course you're right. And, of course, school as an occupation attracts a great many talented, dedicated, decent human beings. The ones that are memorable, I think, across the board, are the ones that unknowingly sabotage the system. They break out of this narrow set of parameters that are imposed, and in doing so, usually they stick their neck out a country mile. Now, I don't want your readers to get the wrong impression. I'm not talking about people who, you know, wear beards and headbands. I'm talking about people who love ideas and love to spread the love of ideas. Those people are quite dangerous to the systematic schooling philosophy. Often they're tolerated because they set up a disguise over what's really going on. My daughter used to write me from MIT about people she loved, and I said, be very, very careful. Those people are tolerated in order to set up the misapprehension that if only we had more people like that, then schooling would be okay. The most prominent case of what I'm talking about in recent years was the Peruvian immigrant Jaime Escalante, who went to one of the 20 worst schools statistically in the state of California, and inside of 2 years, he had the top-performing class in advanced calculus in the state of California. Of course, he was hated and despised by the school administration and by a great many of his fellow teachers, and eventually he was driven screaming from the building, but not before a movie was made that I really urge all your listeners to rent. It's called Stand and Deliver.
I've heard of that. I haven't seen that one yet. I haven't seen that one. There was also another one called Stand By Me that Morgan Freeman played the principal in.
Is that the one with the baseball bat?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that court, that's a peripheral topic, but I had plenty of occasion over 30 years in the classroom to see that kids had utter contempt for people who tolerated ugly behavior.
Well, you know, there was another movie of which I cannot remember the title to, John, that somewhere along the line, this guy had escaped from an institution. Now, this was a comedy, by the way. He had escaped from an institution, made his way into a school, and started filling in for a teacher who was sick. But this guy had every student interested in history because he would walk in dressed up like George Washington, and he made all the kids perform.
You're really not joking.
No.
There are people like that sprinkled across the country. There's a famous teacher who wrote a book called The Teacher Who Couldn't Read. The guy became, I think it was in Oregon, he became the Teacher of the Year, but in fact, he couldn't read. He got through college with good grades, and he couldn't read. And he became an English teacher, and he couldn't read. I met him a few years ago at a convention, and we laughed for a long time. But in his book, he explains how you can represent the appearance of a well-read person and pick up cues, you know, and
absolutely
communicate them. It's it's a revelation, but Escalante is revolutionary in this sense, George. We're talking about advanced calculus, which this man, who was an overweight, overage Peruvian immigrant, taught to kids who'd never eaten off a tablecloth before.
That's incredible.
Mexican immigrant kids, and inside of 2 years, forget Beverly Hills, it was the top-performing calculus class in the state of California, and inside of 3 years, in the United States, including private boarding schools, he was the third top-performing calculus class.
What happened to him? Why'd they drum him out?
Oh, well, don't you see that the distribution of kids in classes, and they're not called classes by accident, it's an attempt to stabilize the social class system. To do that, you have to have most people content with where they're placed, wherever that is. So what Escalante's performance did with a very, very abstract and high-prestige subject, advanced calculus, was to show that, I don't mean to offend anybody, but the wetback children, you know, Mexican immigrants, could rise to the very top of that intellectual scale in a very short period of time. Do you see the revolutionary message there?
Absolutely.
that we're sitting on probably 60 million kids confined in schooling, and like ourselves, for which it's probably too late, I mean, what we have is a genius that's as common as the air we breathe. It's simply, George, that over the course of human history, no managerial system ever figured out how to operate with people who were too smart or too moral, too competent. So it's necessary to layer these people. I'm not defending what they did. It's a bankruptcy of imagination, but it perpetuates itself from decade to decade, from century to century.
Are you convinced that we are going to get a better education system in the next 10 years, or are we still going down the same path?
Oh, no. We're going down the same path recklessly, much faster than we ever did. That's what No Child Left Behind is. I mean, pray that your child is left behind. The tools of indoctrination are much more sophisticated than they ever were before, and the school has been tied intimately with the workplace now, so that the penalties for not subordinating yourself and repeating what you're told to repeat can be quite large. Now, I hope in the course of the hours we're together, I can show you that, in fact, the manager's children aren't taught this way, and the people who escape this trap on any level can move very quickly through the system. But if you believe what you're told, if you believe, for example, that standardized tests have any connection with high quality, then you're really lost.
You're right. I always thought that a good teacher didn't even grade with a test, simply graded by attitude and ability and just the way a student reacted in class.
Oh, you're on to something very, very important. I couldn't have been in classroom teaching for 3 years before I realized that in the first 48 hours that I was with my classes, if I watched them very closely, I could tell almost perfectly who would be the A students, who would be the B students, C, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I say that, I don't mean I could tell who would produce the highest quality work or surprise me in the class with accomplishment. I mean who would get the highest grades. What I eventually concocted, I hope your audience gets a kick out of this, about 20 years into the business, when I realized that the people who scored highest on the reading test actually couldn't read very well, I concocted a reading test, an open book reading test with a very, very simple book, All Quiet on the Western Front, a famous First World War novel, that in the course of 10 years administering it to the top-performing kids in the reading class, nobody, not a single kid, was able to pass. It was an open book test with extremely stupid questions asked, no trick questions. What was the secret of them not being able to pass? All right, get ready for this. And those of you out there who are students of the business, get a pencil in hand. The standardized reading test asks about seven or eight different kinds of reading information. But in fact, in a complex piece of reading, there's several hundred different qualities of information. If you addict kids to being rewarded for remembering these seven or eight qualities of information, they will, especially the brighter kids, they will wipe their minds blank of all other kinds of information. They will act as their own prisoners so that they'll be able to read the kind of information that, say, a boss would leave behind and say, do this, this, and this
right,
while I'm down in Bermuda. But they won't be able to penetrate the mind of the author, his intentions, etc., etc. Wow. So all I did was ask for one or another of the 193 missing kinds of information. And in the first couple of years, to my horror, really, when I saw that that people couldn't get more than 10 on an exam, and
right.
these are kids who were supposedly reading on a college level, I then, because I wasn't out to torment kids, I changed it to an open book test. And All Quiet on the Western Front is written in one-syllable words.
Stay with us, John. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back with you and pick up where we left off. A little bit later on tonight, I also want to talk with you about Darwinism versus creationism. And, of course, that that movie with Morgan Freeman was called Lean on Me. And the other one with the guy who escaped from the institution and becomes a substitute teacher, everyone is telling me by a fast blast that it's teachers. I think that was what it was. I'll be back in a moment with John Taylor Gatto right here on Coast to Coast AM.
City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
How would you like to pick up a couple CDs, 2.5 hours of scary ghost stories, bumper music, and some phone calls all put on? 2.5 hours. Couple ways you can get that and order that. One is going to a new website called AfterDarkCD.com. That's AfterDarkCD.com. And now those of you who do not have computers, yes, I can hear you going, oh, no, what about us? There is a toll-free number. Here it is, 800-598-2331. That's 800-598-2331. This is a CD you can get in time for the holidays, great stocking stuffers, but it is undated. And it's great for just about any time. So AfterDarkCD.com or 800-598-2331. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with John Taylor Gatto, our guest. John, let's get back to what you were talking about in terms of how you kind of changed the testing a little bit to find out why people were or were not responding.
Well, in the case of the people who were rewarded by the standardized testing system, I had independently ascertained that they couldn't read very well. And it really baffled me. So I thought about it and thought about it, I mean for several years, and finally it occurred to me that the way the questions were asked on the standardized test repeated a request for a very narrow number of categories of information. And I knew that from being a student of the language that there were several hundred categories of information. So that I said, what if I ask these kids from these different types of information. How would they do? And I took a simple book, All Quiet on the Western Front, although an excellent, excellent book, but written in one and two syllable words. And I first presented these tests the way tests are usually presented. So you had to remember. But when I would get the best scores being 10 or 20 on that, I felt like I'd been unfair. So I said, what if I give them an open book test? And the results were almost the same. They were slightly better, marginally better, but nobody in 10 years of doing this ever passed the test. So I was really able to open the kids' eyes to how they had been conditioned not to read, even though they appeared to be reading well.
See, that was the result of you did your own private test, basically, and you found out that the conditioning was the reason why they couldn't get good scores, no matter what they tried to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, all of us have noticed that the span of attention among teenagers is very short. It's hard to get a teenage kid to concentrate on anything. If I told you that that is a deliberately conditioned phenomenon by the normal attributes of a day in school, I mean, I could specify those attributes as well. Of course, it would seem like I was talking about some phenomenal conspiracy. Well, I would say this to your listeners. When you eat chicken or beef, do you feel that you're conspiring against those lower life forms? I don't think so. And similarly, the people who organized this system believed that there was a danger to human progress if ordinary people were allowed to develop independent consciousness, and especially according to Darwin, that's the same Charles Darwin who's in every high school textbook in the country. Mm-hmm. According to Darwin, the book is in question is Descent of Man, published in the United States in 1871. Darwin said that if the bad breeding stock, which he estimated to be 95% of the population, crossbred with the good stuff, that evolution would march backwards. George, I'm not making this up. And if anyone listening to your show is Irish, Darwin used the Irish as an example of an entire race, he called them, that was bad breeding stock. Now, that, I know, isn't mentioned in any high school textbook, but go to Descent of Man and you'll see information about the Irish that you'll burst into laughter, unless you're Irish, of course.
That's right. My Boston audience is going crazy right now, probably.
Oh, my. Well, I for those of you who came to the show late, I'm apologizing for being merry about this. After dealing with this for the last 20 years, it's the only way I can keep my sanity.
Well, but, you know, John, if you were to tell a kid today, just go up to him and say, what's 46 minus 13? I don't think he could give you the answer without a calculator.
Oh, my. Yes, and it's much worse than that. I was speaking to a teacher the other day, an English teacher, who said she hadn't had a single student for years who could write a focused essay of analysis. When she was talking offhandedly about Pinochet's Nazi-style regime in Chile, you know, in the 70s and 80s, not a single person in any of her classes knew where Chile was. Not a single one in any of her classes knew what socialism or fascism was. Nobody knew. She made analogies to Plato's Allegory of the Cave. Not a single person recognized that. And it was impossible, she said, for any of them to understand the theme of the novel that she was having them read in class without a basic knowledge of of Plato's work, which the novel had been derived from. No one in the class or any of her classes had ever heard of the CIA-sponsored coup that terminated Chile's democracy. It's fascinating. We have wiped the slate clean for most of our kids and replaced it with nonsense garbage or disconnected facts. I have a wonderful piece of evidence to present to your audience.
Sure.
Somewhere around the year 1900, that's a long time ago, a century and more, Cambridge University, certainly one of the most prestigious universities in the history of the human race, forbade short answer tests to be used. And they've continued that ever since. You can't get a degree at Cambridge without first announcing to the faculty what quality degree you want, which is either first class, second class, third class, or ordinary. Can you imagine somebody saying, I want an ordinary
yeah,
degree?
I just want an ordinary degree, please.
And then, how do you get that degree? You have to write a long essay that's either first class, second class, third class, or ordinary. Now, Oxford held out for about a decade, and then they were compelled by the obvious rightness of the Cambridge thing to adopt pretty much the same system. The idea is that 100 years ago and more, the Cambridge dons understood that if you fill people's minds with disconnected facts, you've in fact destroyed their ability to think in context. They can memorize the facts you want them to memorize, but they can't think clearly about, you know, the hows and whys of things, the connections between things, so that these mass inoculations of short answer tests are just a fabulous way to remove the mind,
yeah,
the intellect from ordinary people. And when I say ordinary people, I don't mean that in any pejorative sense. People are made ordinary by their imagination, by their enterprise, by their opportunities. My experience and Jaime Escalante's experience was that virtually nobody is ordinary. That a wetback kid can go to the top of the advanced calculus scale inside of a year. That's why Escalante had to be driven out of the business. And that's why the movie about him ducks what he actually did. I mean, they make him the standard kind of heroic teacher. You know, I mean, we've seen that movie 100 times, every one of us.
They couldn't take it, could they?
They couldn't take the reality of it because it calls into question all theories of management. It calls into question Darwin's idea that 95% of the human race is biological trash. It calls into question the Prussian system that we borrowed for the American schooling system, which assumes that people are rigidly layered into different quality personalities, minds, characters there. It isn't true. 30 years in the classroom, and mind you, I come from quite a conservative background,
right.
And I went to 2 Ivy League colleges that indoctrinated me in how stupid most people are. But the evidence of my eyes and ears in the classroom was so contradictory to what I had been taught, not by my family, who were very egalitarian, but certainly by the formal education I had. I should have not seen the miracles that were being produced on a regular basis by perfectly ordinary kids who were supposed to be C&D students.
So what do you blame the most, John, the system or the teacher? Because I think both are important to a student.
I think what we have to understand is that it's not an accident that we speak of the school system. In a systematic form of schooling, a teacher's like a relay meant to convey the orders from you know, the higher authority. And those teachers, all of them, are measured by how purely they transmit what they're asked to transmit. All the rest of that stuff that makes great teachers that we all have recognized as students is irregular. The system is meant to produce a perfectly manageable population, and we've got to face this, George, that in a corporate economy, that leads to immense rivers of wealth. Of course, the price is that you mutilate most of your population. Nevertheless, if material is what you're after, Lord knows this is a way to do it.
No question about it, John. When you look at teachers, do they all get paid in certain groups, don't they? How come they don't get paid as individuals? You know, like, you're a good teacher, you should cut your own deal.
Because what a parent or a kid thinks of as good, or maybe just the general innocent public who doesn't think much about schools, and rightly so, but good in systematic terms, think of it. If someone was good enough to stand out from the rest, by definition, they're asystematic. They're a danger to the stability of the system, and they have to be eliminated or brought back to earth one way or another. The only exceptions to that in teaching are, A, the class of saboteurs, of which I was one, who usually identify themselves as saboteurs, so their tenure is very short, or there's a certain number of teachers who are encapsulated. They're insulated and allowed to be better than the average as long as they're kept apart from the rest of the faculty, and their lessons are kept apart from most of the students. That's not hard to do. All you have to do is award a teacher special favors, petty stuff like a parking permit or a room on the shady side of the building instead of the sunny side of the building, and what you have is somebody who will be ostracized by the rest of the faculty.
Now, I want you to point something out, by the way, from a couple messages I'm getting from some people who have totally misunderstood what you were saying about Hispanic kids when you used the phrase wetbacks. That wasn't coming from you. That was how that school system theoretically thought of them. Because,
oh, correct.
Yes, all right.
No, absolutely. In fact, my message about the people that I passed that offensive term wetback is that someone knowledgeable about what they were capable of could raise them to the pinnacle of advanced calculus in 1 year. Think of the threat to the whole math teaching system in the whole United States if we allowed that to be widely understood. That's what the Russian girl meant when she looked at our math curriculum and said, is this a joke?
Correct. Okay, good. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I worked for, I'd say, half of my 30-year teaching career. I worked with kids who certainly were massively disadvantaged from either Black Harlem or Spanish Harlem, and my lessons about the universality of human genius are largely drawn from those kids who had already been disqualified.
You see, though, how some people, and not a lot, believe me, but how some people just don't listen.
Oh, well, I would say a lot. They don't listen and they don't read because they're trained that way in school. That's on purpose in order to make the management system efficient. Look, if you can't listen, and if you can't read, you are permanently out of the loop where having an independent livelihood is concerned. And as long as you're an employee, and I mean all the way up through middle management, you're no danger to anybody. You know, and this is the way we keep people in their place, by removing the intellectual tools, also by removing the moral tools. I'll tell you the most revolutionary thing that you can teach 12 and 13-year-old kids who are swinging on the chandeliers, you know, et cetera, et cetera, is that a major way that we select people for privileges isn't their scores on tests. Nobody even looks at those tests. It's simply that they have graceful manners and appear to be civilized. So I said, I used to tell kids, look, I can't make you be that way, but I can tell you that if you don't know how to fake it successfully, that you are going to be persecuted every day of your life, and you'll never get a break unless you win the lottery. There, I said, the greatest thing you can learn right now is how to look like and act like a lady and a gentleman. I said, if you want to be a savage inside, I said, hey, go ahead. I can't do anything about that. But I actually knew that once you've received the good treatment in return that comes when you act in a decorous fashion, you never go back to the other thing.
No, at all. You can't. It's impossible. John, we're going to take this break. We're coming up on the top of the hour. We've got you for a couple more hours. I want to talk with you a little bit more about this topic we're on right now, and that's the screwed up school systems that we have. And also, I want to get into Darwin and evolution and creationism when we come right back. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Song on the air.